Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Mike Peskin for Brian Lehrer this morning. Say the phrase Plessy versus Ferguson, it immediately conjures up another three-word phrase, separate but equal. In insidious words, because of their dishonesty, because of their inequity, in 1892, on this date, Homer Plessy tried to board a train car in Louisiana, New Orleans, Louisiana. He was not allowed on the car because of the racial rules at the time. It was very much like a Rosa Parks situation. His case went all the way up to the Supreme Court, where the doctrine of separate but equal lodged into the public law and consciousness for years and years until Brown versus the Board of Education. Today, descendants of Plessy and descendants of Ferguson have an organization called Plessy and Ferguson that talk about the very issues that Homer Plessy raised over 100 years ago. Keith Plessy, Phoebe Ferguson, welcome to WNYC.
Hi. Thank you.
Keith, first tell me about Homer Plessy and how you are related to him, and what did he do in 1892?
Well, in 1892, Homer Plessy was selected to purchase a ticket, board a train, get arrested, and be booked, and eventually his case would go all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. It was the plan that the Citizens Committee crafted years before Homer Plessy actually boarded that train.
And the Citizens Committee was a New Orleans-based civil rights group that was behind this, much like the NAACP supported Rosa Parks.
Yes, you could consider them the 19th century NAACP.
And Homer Plessy was a first cousin of your great-grandfather? Am I getting that right?
Well, my great-grandfather was Homer Plessy.
Oh, he was Homer
cousin.
Plessy. Okay.
I'm a fourth-generation descendant of Homer Plessy.
Right.
Through my great-grandfather.
Growing up as a Plessy, did that mean something to you in New Orleans, where you still live?
Well, it was brought to my attention several times as a young child in elementary school. I attended a historically black elementary school that was built in the 1920s, in the late 1920s, and it served New Orleans for a long time. It's boarded up now. Hopefully we'll bring that school back. But when I was an elementary school student, I was told often that my name was the same as the gentleman in the book we were talking about. But it was only a paragraph that we could go on, and it was just a footnote in the history book. Until later, I somewhat understood my relationship to him. But I didn't know all the connections as far as the genealogy research went until 1996.
And Phoebe Ferguson, tell me about your famous ancestor.
Okay. Well, he actually was not from New Orleans originally. He was from Martha's Vineyard. And his ancestors were all shipmasters, but he wanted to be a lawyer, so he went to Boston to study law, and he studied under a U.S. district attorney in Boston called Hallett, forget his first name, and he was a politician, a district attorney, and an abolitionist, interestingly enough. And he, that was in the 1850s. In 1865, he, you know, heard that there was opportunities in the South. And so he traveled to New Orleans and basically hung out his shingle there as a you know, civil lawyer, and then very quickly married into an abolitionist family, T.J. Earhart. He married his daughter, and T.J. Earhart was a very outspoken abolitionist here. So that's kind of a story that one wouldn't expect to come from that particular judge.
Right. And he was your great-grandfather?
My great-great-grandfather.
Great-great-grandfather. And do you know anything about his views on segregation apart from his, you know, famous judicial decision?
Well, we can only really assume what his positions were. We do know that, he was a Puritan from the East Coast, and so when he arrived in New Orleans, he was very anti-gambling when he saw what was going on here, and, you know,
maybe not the best place for a Puritan in 1892. Yeah.
It's really funny he decided to stay when he saw all that, but he decided not only would he stay, but he was going to take on gambling and closed every gambling, you know, house there was in New Orleans, you know. And he read the Riot Act, basically, to the rest of the judges. And, to the rest of the... Yeah, when he became judge, he really let him have it. But so we know that, and we know that otherwise he seems to have been very mild-mannered in terms of the rest of his social life in New Orleans. And there's no real indication that he was in any way a racist, actually. He didn't belong to any of the social clubs which had a lot of racist tendencies in terms of, you know, exclusion of anyone but, you know, sort of an old line white person. Except he belonged to the Knights of Pythias, which was sort of a Abraham Lincoln style social club, and really not at all the New Orleanian kind. As a matter of fact, you know, the case wasn't even mentioned in his obit.
Yeah.
Which I find fascinating.
And how, and at the time, and either of you could take this, you know, set the scene in terms of racial law. From what I understand, Homer Plessy lived at a time when he experienced more freedom, you know, 20 years prior to the 1890s in New Orleans, and it was gradually taken away. Am I getting that right, Keith?
Correct. Mm-hmm. Reconstruction allowed, actually, Homer Plessy, if you want to go directly to Homer, he was born in 1863, shortly after the Emancipation Proclamation was issued by Abraham Lincoln. And he was born into a time in New Orleans that was probably the most integrated area in America. Schools were open to both races. You had several pictures that were taken around that time that indicate that there were integrated schools. And Homer Plessy, as he was growing up, was free to marry a white woman if he chose. There were no restrictions on that during the Reconstruction period. But
and by the way, we should
freedoms
and Keith, we should mention under the laws of the time, he was considered, you know, it's an antiquated word now, but an octoroon, which also, from my understanding, technically means 1/8 black, but it was just sort of the word for a mixed race individual at the time.
Yes, well, I can tell you, his 1/8, we found out through genealogy research,
mm-hmm,
that his 1/8 black was a slave woman named Agnes. Who became a free woman of color after her French consort, who bore 7 children with her eventually, was a American Revolutionary War hero who was decorated 4 times under General Bernardo de Galvez. And she was fighting for her freedom when he finished his participation in the American Revolution. He fought for her freedom in Spanish court, because it was under Spanish colonial rule at the time. And he fought for her freedom. Matthew DeVoe, alias Portilla, fought for Agnes's freedom for a year in Spanish court, and General Bernardo de Galvez signed her manumission papers. And my good cousin, Michael Nolden Henderson, has the papers in Atlanta.
Wow. And how did this Plessy, Keith Plessy, and this Ferguson, Phoebe Ferguson, join up to start this organization? Phoebe, you can take that.
Okay, well, it's a funny story. I didn't find out, actually, that I was related to the judge until about 2002, when somebody here had bought his original house that he built here, and it looked very much like a Martha's Vineyard house with the gingerbread stuff and everything, and he wanted to restore it to its original condition. And so he...
And when you say here, where are you speaking to us from?
New Orleans.
Okay.
And he tracked me down, you know, looking for someone that might have some image of the house as it was. And anyway, that started my investigation of my own family history, because I found the genealogy and discovered that it really was, we really were related to the judge. And so one thing led to another, and that was about 2002. And in 2004, when I came to New Orleans to meet Keith Medley, who wrote this book, We as Free Men, Plessy versus Ferguson, which had just come out. He then set up a meeting with Keith and I, and when we met each other at a book signing, you know, Keith came up to me and he said, you know, hi, I'm Keith Plessy, and I said, hi, I'm Phoebe Ferguson, and the first thing that I thought of was, you know, they just, oh my God, I'm so sorry. You know, it just came out. Like, I just felt the weight of, you know, 108 years of racial injustice just suddenly just overwhelmed me, you know. And he just took that in stride, and he said, you know, hey, it's no longer Plessy versus Ferguson. It's Plessy and Ferguson. And, you know, that was, like, just the perfect thing to say to kind of help me through that. And it really started our friendship. And I moved back to New Orleans in 2006. And, you know, just we started talking about it. And people wanted us to come and talk together because they wanted to see us together. And, you know, so it just grew.
And, Keith, did you have that line? Had you thought about that beforehand, or it just came out in the moment?
Straight from the heart.
And the website, and I thought about this, you know, if you wanted to drive maybe maximum, if you were into a search engine optimization, you'd have called the website Plessy versus Ferguson, but it seems a conscious decision that your organization and your website is plessyandferguson.org. Tell me about what you guys do.
Okay, we are. Go ahead, Phoebe. You're on a roll. Go ahead.
No, Keith, go ahead.
Okay, you allow me to say it. Okay, well, we our organization, the Plessy and Ferguson Foundation, is for education, preservation, and outreach. Through our educational programs, we've begun to visit schools, junior high schools, elementary schools, high schools, universities, places of business. We went to One Shell Square building one time, talked to the, during Black History Month, we talked to a group of workers on their break. We've been going around with that particular thing to raise the consciousness of the case and to expand on the knowledge that we've gained over the years of research from researchers, I'll say. We've had a lot of help in doing that. And then with preservation, we just recently, if someone goes to the website, they will see a plaque that was dedicated to the desegregation of public schools in New Orleans in 1960, which happened on November 14, 1960, and the 50th anniversary rolled around last year, November 14th. We were able to put a plaque up in the spot in front of McDonough 19, 5909 St. Claude in New Orleans in the lower Ninth Ward.
Yeah.
And we were able to put that plaque up, and the public paid for it. 15 states around the country donated money for us to do that.
We are going to leave it there. Keith Plessy, Jane Gross, plessyandferguson.org is the website. Thank you both very much.
Okay, thank you.